Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kurt Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. This, my fellow Americans, is indeed the broadcast for September 13th in the year of our Lord, 2016. This is our two of two with a goal always to protect life, liberty, and property and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. We believe the checks and balances put in place by our founding fathers absolutely brilliant. That, along with the supreme law of the land, is the way to restore the republic. We don't need a revolution, but a restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth certainly should be the order of the day, my fellow Americans. Welcome to the broadcast. Hope you're all doing absolutely fantastic. Now, before we get to our guest, we have a few stories we got to cover here with Kurt Crosby. You ready, Kurt, for this?
Okay.
All right. I guess Wells Fargo is in the mix, huh?
Yeah. Now, I just thought this would be kind of a booming economy update. This is one way you really have a lot of new workers or a lot of released workers, Sam. But apparently there were 5,300 of them, I think, that just got let go. I guess they were caught kind of faking new accounts and stuff like that. Did you see this story?
Oh, yeah.
And
it's a big old sham, my brother.
Yeah, they say 5,300 Wells Fargo employees fired, over 2 million phony accounts. They say people don't really like paying bank fees, but imagine paying fees on a ghost account you didn't even sign up for. Yeah, I guess that's exactly what happened, they say, to Wells Fargo customers nationwide. Federal regulators, you know, they make them seem like they're the great saviors here. But anyway, they say Wells Fargo employees secretly created millions of unauthorized bank and credit card accounts without their customers knowing it. This all started back in 2011, I guess. These phony accounts earned the bank unwarranted fees and allowed Wells Fargo employees to boost their sales figures and make more money. These employees secretly opened unauthorized accounts. This is according to the director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, Richard Cordray. He said this in a statement, said they, this all helped to hit sales targets and receive bonuses. They confirmed to Wells Fargo, by the way, confirmed this to CNN Money, that it had fired 5,300 employees related to the shady behavior over the last few years. That's quite a chunk.
I got a question. Why, if this shady behavior has been happening over the last few years, do we just find out about it now, huh?
Yeah. They say, additionally, Wells Fargo employees also submitted application for, I guess they did, 565, over a half a million credit card accounts without their knowledge or consent. You know, they have something they call the CFPB. Now, I think that's that government thing. Yeah, it's a Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. I haven't heard much about that. One more thing that's, I'm sure, keeping us all straight and squared away, kind of like the Federal Reserve.
Oh, boy.
Anyway.
All right. Anyway, the bottom line is it's a huge scandal. It's in the mainstream press.
Yeah.
But the bottom line in my mind with this story, Kurt, is what do you expect from banking cartels?
Yeah, that's right. I guess the bank has agreed to pay $185 million in fines. It's the biggest one that this thing, the CFPB, has instituted since it was founded back in 2011. And they're going to refund $5 million to customers.
Yeah, like that's really going to help. All right. I guess prosecutors, Kurt, have dismissed all charges against talk show host Pete Santilli. Santilli, who also participated in the April 2014 protest organized by the Bundy family in Bunkerville, Nevada, was the only defendant in the Malfear Wildlife Refuge who did not spend the night at the federal facility. Now, they say although he will not face trial for that case in Portland, he remains in federal custody and he will be transferred to Nevada, where he and several others relating to the Bundy Ranch fiasco in the April 2014 scenario battle with the BLM happened. So time will tell on that. And the Oregon trial begins for seven in the, quote, takeover of the National Wildlife Refuge, according to the New York Times. Now, Kurt, here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I get when Ammon Bundy says, hey, you know what? We got a land problem. You know what? The government's out of control on the land. I agree with Ammon on that.
Yep.
And I went to a peaceful rally to help free the Hammonds because I believe they were wrongly imprisoned.
Yep.
However, when they take over a wildlife refuge, I absolutely oppose that. I disagree. Yep. I think they're wrong. I think it's a mistake. I think they're, in my opinion, very foolish.
Uh-huh.
And I don't believe that aggressive civil disobedience with guns in your hand is a smart move at all. I think it's absolutely abhorrent. When Ammon Bundy went in there and asked me to go, I refused. And we debated on the air with Ammon while he was in the wildlife refuge about his actions. Mm-hmm. And he said, Sam, you know, someday you're going to know the truth and you're going to join us. And I said, Ammon, hopefully you'll know the truth and leave before you go to prison. And I hope you don't die. Well, his friend's dead. And he's in prison. And I told Pete not to go and be the inside reporter, and now Pete's in jail. And I'm telling you, these guys need to understand there's a big difference in the restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth, which I absolutely stand for, and a revolution, which I absolutely stand against.
Yep.
All right, let's see what our guest thinks of all this stuff. Mm-hmm. By the way, Sam Bushman and Richard Mack wrote an open letter, a press release for the constitutional sheriffs, and said we oppose Bundy and their actions, and we offered to help negotiate to try to get Bundy out of there, and no one listened to us. But we stood against Bundy's actions then, and we still do. Never mind the fact that we pray Bundy and crew get a fair trial. And after all, we believe in the rule of law, and hopefully the truth can come out and justice can be served. I don't believe that Ammon Bundy means to be a criminal or has criminal intent or evil or hostile intent. I do believe he was somehow deceived into some very, very foolish actions. And I've been beat up all over the internet for this. They say, oh, Sam, why don't you stand for your friends when your friends are down? Because I believe there's just holy, sacred causes to stand for. And then there's just foolish moves that ought not be supported. Primarily so that others don't make those foolish moves. All right, Alan Phillips, attorney at law, vaccinerights.com, pandemicresponseproject.com. Welcome back to Liberty Roundtable Live, my friend.
Pleasure and honor to be with you here today, Sam, as always.
Do you want to sound off on this Oregon trial thing really quick? I don't know if you know, but we went to the peaceful rally, and then they tried to take over the refuge, and we stood against it completely.
I just want to throw in sort of a more generalized comment, if I may, Sam, and I really admire the distinctions you're making and the really important ones, and maybe could be summarized in sort of a short phrase that we need to understand and factor in both principle and practicality.
Good, great point. Yes.
And that's sort of what I heard you essentially saying there, that I don't think there are any principle differences. There are differences, or those are minimal, perhaps, if any at all, but a very huge difference on sort of the practical level. What's going to be most effective? And it was really interesting, Sam. You and I had a brief conversation in the past about is the tax system in the U.S. legal or not, and your response again was recognizing the principle but being very practical, and you said I can do a lot more good if I'm not in jail for fighting a system that
the IRS is a bunch of thugs, they're wrong, and we need to shut them down. But if you think I'm just not going to pay my taxes and go to jail and lose the war because I thought I was going to win the battle, you're sadly mistaken. I ain't doing that.
Yeah. So it's a really practical concern. How can, you know, if each of us ask individually, what can I do to that will be the most good over the long term? Well, the starting place is, and I would say from my perspective as an attorney, know what the law is, know where the legal lines and boundaries are. And sometimes the lines aren't clear, but let's get clear about that when that's the case. But then there's a separate question. What is the rest of the world do or likely to do in response to this action or that action and so forth. And I think you're a lot more help out of jail than in jail. And I would rather you be, even if you're in jail for all the right reasons in terms of you fought a system that was corrupt or wrong. And but if the bottom line is, like as you put it in that example, if you're in jail, you're not going to be very effective. And out of jail doing the work that you're doing now, I think you're providing an incredible contribution.
And by the way, I reported more on the Ammon Bundy situation. I submit to you even more than Pete Santilli. He was more in-your-face, detailed while it was going down, but I'm still reporting on it, and Pete's not, for example. And I hope that these guys get a fair trial. I pray they do, and I pray everybody gets a fair trial.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the Liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the Liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today. With news the networks refuse to use, you are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
You know, I strike a balance, ladies and gentlemen, between hard-hitting talk radio, standing for liberty, teaching correct principles. But you know what? There's a practicality reality, as Alan Phillips, our esteemed guest, wisely points out in our discussions. And there's a right way and a wrong way to go about things is the simple summation. And I'll give you an example. Going against the IRS in terms of doing your very best to reduce their power, doing your best to eventually audit them, to shut them down, to stop them from going after conservatives, all great things that need to happen. Is it unconstitutional? Without a doubt. Should it be shut down yesterday? Without question. Am I going to back away from those bold statements? Not a chance. But I'm also not going to be foolish and go to jail and lose a battle because I'm not smart enough to see the war. I'm going to keep standing for principle every time and educating. And when we get enough Americans to truly be educated and decide that we've had enough of the chicanery, enough of the abuse, then we will get rid of the IRS. But until then, there's what's called a priority of morals, in my humble opinion. And I don't mean to go off on this forever, but it does relate to vaccines, and we'll get there. But there's a priority of morals that I believe there is. Is it more important for Sam Bushman to fight the IRS and maybe go to jail? Or is it more important for Sam Bushman to be the breadwinner for his family and support my lovely wife and the 8 children that I've been blessed with? Well, I submit that the IRS deal needs to go on the back burner. Now, some would say, well, Sam, that just means you're a sunshine patriot, my friend. You're not for real. And our response is quite the contrary. I submit to you that if we put our priorities in order, it starts with God, family, and country. Country's third, don't you know? And the IRS is way down on that list. Do we got to stop them? Yes. But can I fix the world by 3 o'clock? Can I stop them myself? Not even a chance. In fact, there's an Indian tribe. And you would think this Indian tribe would have a chance to fight the IRS. After all, they're supposedly not even American citizens. They're, what, in their own countries or their own tribe, if you will, and they have different rules and, well, not when it comes to the IRS. See, Kurt?
Yeah, they're called the Miccosukee tribe. Miccosukee. I've just never even heard of the Miccosukees. That almost
well, just
like
leave it to the
Japanese,
IRS to let you hear of them.
That sounds like a Japanese Indian tribe, but anyway, to me. But they say there's, well, almost 240 Native American tribes across the U.S., and they are like a lot of those because they operate, well, casinos. But unlike a lot of these other ones, they've claimed that the revenues distributed to the tribal members are exempt from income taxes. So now, bottom line is they say now they're going to lose a $1 billion bet with the IRS. I just find it interesting, Sam, that you've got these people who we say they have their own country, you know, pretty much their own laws and all that kind of stuff, and yet the IRS, you know, can still go after them as well.
Well, and you got to try with a gambling casino. These guys have literally, what, billions of dollars, Kurt?
Well, yeah, but they kind of want to keep their own money, and they kind of, you know, don't like it. I guess one lady in particular has now been slapped with the $278,000 tax bill. They say after she failed to file her 2001 return. Let's see, it's 2016. Anyway.
And a lot of these people run around and say, look, I've been getting away with it since 2001. I agree the wheels of justice grind slow, and I realize it's false justice. I also know, though, that, hey, you know what? There's battles to fight, there's battles not to fight, and there's proper ways of going about those fights. The Bible kind of illustrates it pretty well, in my opinion, when it says, when with thine adversary, agree with him quickly.
Mm-hmm.
When there's no way to win the situation, you don't capitulate who you are and your principles and give up, but you also don't, you know, thumb your nose at the lion that's ready to chomp you down, right?
Yeah, amen to that. And the nice thing to know is there are solutions. There are a lot better ways of collecting taxes that would be a lot more fair, just like there's a better way to deal with the whole vaccine situation.
And that's why we educate towards the solutions. When enough Americans demand appropriate sales taxes, appropriate tariffs at the borders, apportionment taxes, which means the states would collect based on the census and then send their portion to the federal government, their appropriate apportionment based on the proper role of limited government, and the government behaves its constitutional roles in that the federal government has tremendous power, but in a very defined, narrow scope. See, now we're getting somewhere with discussions. And until we really lay out the true way to solve the problem, we're no better off than the other complainers, folks. That's one of the differences, is we complain plenty on Liberty Roundtable Live, but every single articulated complaint has an appropriate solution to go with it. And there's where most talk show hosts fail and fall flat on their face. They run around and bring you to the brink of despair and discouragement and frustration and anger, but then they don't take you all the way to the solutions and the answers. They don't give you hope at the end of the day, and that's where I think that they make a tremendous mistake. Alan Phillips, what do you think of this? Even the Indian tribe can't get away with thumbing their nose at the IRS, sir.
Well, you know, you raised some good points there, Sam, and I think a lot of the issues that go on today, as individuals, we are powerless. It's easy, as we keep saying, in the correct circumstances, to throw an individual in jail and hush them up, and maybe that even discourages anyone else from doing anything. We don't necessarily have to have a majority of people all aligned either, though. Historically, we've seen many instances when a small number of very focused, organized, and in some cases loud people have invoked or precipitated major changes. But many times as an individual, we're just up against the system and just over our heads, but maybe as groups. And so and maybe there are isolated instances, Sam, where somebody makes a statement by going to jail or some other equivalent sacrifice, if you will, that it calls attention to an issue in a way that has a positive or constructive change. So I think ultimately you have to look at everything on a case-by-case basis. But in general, you know, I've got to be asking the question, what is going to be effective? And many times we miss even a more fundamental first step, which is what exactly is it that we need to change? For example, in the vaccine issue, I see lots of people who misunderstand what our rights are. And if you don't understand what our rights are to begin with, then you're not really going to be able to target the problem precisely and effectively in order to change. For example, during the so-called swine flu pandemic back in 2009 and 2010, I heard lots of people making this sort of blanket declaration, well, I have a right to decide what to put in my body. And I would agree 110% that you ought to have that right. But when I look at the law as it sits on the books today, we don't have that right, not in the absolute sense that many people seem to think fundamentally that we do or should.
Now, that's where the practicality comes in, because a lot of people would say, well, constitutionally, hey, any law that violates the supreme law of the land is null and void. And I believe that's true on a principle basis, but it isn't true when it comes to day-to-day reality. They will force the jab on you. They will use a pandemic if necessary. And so there's exceptions to these realities, and we teach to the ideal and live in the real, right?
Well, let me talk just a second here about the Constitution to hopefully clarify a point, because and this is going to sound like heresy with the first part, but let me get through to the end and finish to make the point. The first step, as I say to people, well, actually, the Constitution doesn't really tell us anything about our rights. What I mean by that statement is not to deny the fact that the Constitution is a critical starting point. But there are all these enumerated rights in the Constitution, portions of which are sometimes collectively referred to as fundamental rights that, thanks to the U.S. Supreme Court in a series of cases over the last century or so, apply not only to the federal government, which was originally the U.S. Constitution only applied to the federal government, but now we have these other set of so-called fundamental rights that also apply to state and local governments. But there probably isn't any absolute right, with the possible exception that we're free to think and believe whatever we want to think and believe, whether it has to do with religion or not, for example. But we don't have the right to do whatever we want to do, and where rights bounce up against each other, it's the courts that tell us where the boundaries are.
All right, hold on, because I want you to be able to explore this point further. I think you've nailed something critical that we need to discuss. People need to understand the practical. People need to understand the reality. And people need to understand the convoluted details and how we ferret our way through those things. Alan Phillips, our guest, PandemicResponseProject.com.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
This hour from LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg. The handful of FBI documents recently released detailing the investigation of Hillary Clinton's private email server paint a surprising picture of permissiveness by the Bureau toward the current Democratic candidate and the staff involved in the email scandal. The New York Post highlights how former Chief of Staff Cheryl Mills obstructed investigators' efforts and destroyed evidence and yet received a pass from prosecutors. The smoking gun is on page 16 of the FBI's 47-page report. It details how Mills ultimately made the determinations about which emails should be preserved before she and Clinton decided to delete the rest as personal. The FBI makes clear the procedure Mills used to sort out the emails was suspicious. Mills apparently sorted the emails to delete any correspondence involving requests by Clinton Foundation donors requesting access to the Secretary of State in what has become known as pay-to-play. Tom Fitton, president of Judicial Watch, a government watchdog group, was appalled at the leniency extended. The whole thing was designed to keep Clinton Foundation emails away from investigators, he said. It was clear they did not want any non.gov-related emails picked up in their search, so they said, let's search in a way that those emails won't be picked up. The FBI said Mills shredded any copies of emails she deemed not to be work-related before they were turned over to state in response to requests for information from Judicial Watch, the media, Congress, and the FBI. The laptop hard drive was later wiped clean using a computer program called Bleach. For commentary and insights on a troubled world, visit Joel Skousen's worldaffairsbrief.com. For LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg.
If you're at all like me, you have a tough time remembering appointments and events. But ladies and gentlemen, I have the answer. It's a premier service on the internet called Memo to Me. It's free. You ought to try it. Now I never miss the honey-do items from my wife or the important business meetings. They have strict privacy protection. That means they will release your email address to no one ever. You will not get spam because of Memo to Me. Unmatched dependability. Ladies and gentlemen, these folks have been around since 1998, and they are absolutely up online all the time to send you your reminders and appointments. They have rock-solid reliability. They have 5 redundant internet connections, diesel-powered generators backing up the system. I'm telling you, Memo to Me is the premier reminder service on the internet. It's free. You ought to give it a try. And, oh, by the way, if you're not available at your computer to get your email reminders, they can even send a reminder to your cell phone or pager. I use MemoToMe.com daily and highly recommend it to you. MemoToMe.com. Memo to Me.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
Attorney at law Alan Phillips riding shotgun on the broadcast today. His award-winning websites are vaccinerights.com, pandemicresponseproject.com. You want news related to vaccines? There you go. You want white papers and guidance and support to understand your rights relating to vaccinations and more? I'm telling you right now, vaccinerights.com gets it done just for you. Now, right before the pause, Alan Phillips was making a point about, you know what, the Constitution doesn't give you any rights, people. Go ahead, sir.
Well, what it does is a critical first step. So I'm certainly not dismissing or dissing the Constitution. It's absolutely a critical starting point. But it essentially sets out a list of categories. And rights, with the possible exception of thinking or believing whatever you want to think and believe, are not absolute, and they bounce up against other rights. So, for example, our right historically and presently to refuse vaccines, let's say on religious grounds, if you have religious objections, is bounded by the state's right to say, oops, never mind, in the event of an outbreak or epidemic or bioterrorist threat or attack, any sort of infectious disease emergency. So it's not an absolute right. And religious freedom in general is not an absolute right necessarily. Again, if there's some emergency kind of situation that requires government to temporarily suspend any of a number of rights. The declaration of an emergency can actually suspend, you know, just about any routine right, at least temporarily. So somebody who has alleging that they've been abused in a domestic violence case, they can go into court and get a temporary order without the other party even being there to tell their side of the story. That's an example of an emergency where you sort of bypass the other person's due process rights. Now, it's only temporary. They have a limited number of days to get the other person in so they can tell their side of the story. But the reason that kind of a right exists is so that you can deal in the immediate time with the emergency, get that person who's being allegedly being abused in case it really, you know, they have to have convincing evidence that they're being abused. But it's not the end of the story to go in by yourself, one side, tell your side. You know, and the issue isn't done there. But it's a way, the point is the more generalized concept is that when there's an emergency situation, government legitimately needs the right to take some sort of temporary action pending the full story coming out and then making whatever permanent decision they make. So we have all these bounding rights. And the courts, when we have formal questions about where are the rights, where are the boundaries, the courts decide that. And they decide that through cases that the small subset of the total set of cases that play out day to day around the country in state and federal courts that become formal legal precedent cases. And it's a very tiny percentage of court cases that become formal legal precedent. But when a case does become a formal precedent case, then it serves as a point of reference in the law. And it'll say, here's how this law applies to this situation or that situation. Here's the boundary between these two competing rights. The courts get to draw those lines. So with vaccines, and for better or worse, and I would say many times for worse, healthcare policy and law is driven by mainstream medicine. And I say for worse because despite some many absolutely wonderful people in the mainstream medical system, it is pretty severely corrupt and in other regards and respects dysfunctional. Yet this is the system that drives healthcare policy and law. So even when the courts and legislatures function the way they're supposed to, which is not a given in today's world, if they're starting with a corrupt mainstream medicine, they're likely to end up, in my opinion, in many instances have, ended up with some corrupt policies and laws. And so the system is in dire need of reform. And I think the
Part of the reason that the Founding Fathers said, you know what, if you expect to be ignorant and free, you expect what never was and never will be. In other words, look, you only have what rights you are educated enough and that the people stand again together enough to keep. And you have God-given unalienable rights that are documented in the Declaration of Independence before the Constitution was ever even drafted. So you have some freedom given to you by God, but you're only as free as you're able to keep it. If you live immorally, if you do things that are wrong, eventually, you steal, you go to jail, you lose all your other rights. And so you're right. Rights are not 100% absolute. We think that they ought to be, and that's why we teach to the ideal. But we live in the real, and the courts oftentimes get it wrong. The courts aren't always right. The courts aren't the final and only arbiter on those things. What I mean by that is the state or the legislative bodies can go back and amend and say, listen, you got this wrong, court. You were supposed to interpret this. You've got so sideways on this, we're going to redefine the law to make sure that you get it this time. So, there is a check and balance there, but only if the people are wise enough to use it. And I'll give you an example. I mean, the courts are the ones that said, hey, slavery was fine back in the day. You could literally hunt a slave down, force them to go back to the owners. Yeah, I'm against slavery, but I'm just telling you, the courts haven't always got it right. It's a balance. And the balance directly relates to how educated the people are and how willing they are to self-govern. The less educated they are, the less self-governing they become, the greater hand of government steps in. Wrong or right, that's reality. Alan, what about that summation?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and I'll take it a step further that there have been individuals or large corporations that have financial resources to levy in favor of their particular desired outcome in terms of influencing or in some cases outright manipulating or controlling policy and law in the direction of the evolution of policy and law. So we're in an age and time today where corporations have a tremendous influence, which of course they will tend to do in a capitalistic society in a way that favors their own bottom line, even if that is ultimately to the detriment of others. And the sort of extreme version, which I think is hard for a lot of people to even wrap their mind around, we look at, you can go to the Justice Department website, Federal Justice Department, and I think it's just justice.gov, and do a search there. And I found over 36 combined criminal and civil fines that have been assessed and paid against pharmaceutical companies, over 36 since 2001, that are greater than $100 million. Now, this isn't the only industry out there with people who engage in criminal behavior, but boy, this has got to be one of the top ones. There have literally been criminal fines. Now, there often is a combination criminal and civil fine, but the criminal portion of these fines is routinely happening at over the $100 million level, and there have been two, if not three times, when there have been billion-dollar criminal fines. And I want to clarify, you don't get a criminal fine unless you knew what you were doing when you did it, and you did it anyway. If it's an accident happens, you may still be liable, but that's going to be a civil fine. So this is an industry, despite having many, many wonderful people in it of high integrity, that nevertheless engages routinely in some pretty massive criminal behavior. And this is something that we need to wake up to and recognize. Again, my focus, of course, being vaccines, and then in a more generalized way, the pharmaceutical industry, healthcare industry. There may be other industries that do this too, such as, Department of Defense and energy and so forth. But the part I'm more familiar with, and it's particularly disheartening to see this happening in the arena of healthcare, because when businesses engage in large-scale crime, people's lives are lost or compromised as a result. And in what I would have to qualify as not particularly wild speculation on my part, they do this for three simple reasons. One, nobody goes to jail. Two, there's a net profit. They wouldn't keep doing this if there wasn't a net profit. Either the fines are a lot less than the total profit they got from it, or sometimes they're not getting caught, whatever it is, but the behavior continues. And obviously the people who are making these decisions are able to do so despite the harm it's causing people and sleep well at night. You know, you couldn't do that, I couldn't do that. But it's a statistical reality that something on the order of 4 to 8% of the population is psychopathic. And for purposes of this discussion, when I say words like psychopath or sociopath, what I mean is people without a conscience, people who can make a decision to maximize the number on a spreadsheet, the bottom line. And even though people will die or suffer needlessly as a result, I'm not going to go to jail for it. We're going to have a net profit here, even if we get fined. And they'll make that kind of a decision. There is no correlation between intellectual intelligence and certain kinds of psychological states, such as sociopathy or psychopathy. There are people who are intellectually brilliant and rise to important decision-making positions, such as CEOs of companies, large companies, or state and federal agency decision-makers who, in some instances, I would assert, lack a conscience. That is, they can make decisions that further a private or personal gain, even though it harms people, and somehow they still sleep at night. So these are some of the dynamics we're dealing with, I think, in the world today, Sam, and it really is a complex mess.
It's complex in its application and in reality, but it's very simple in what we need to do. One, we need to educate one another. Number two, we need to understand the fine lines between practicality and reality versus the ideal and principle. No doubt the ideal and principle trump everything, but you got to be wise enough to have moral imperative and understand moral priorities. And when you do so, then you can come to the table for real solutions. And the only answer is enough American people getting educated and working together for solutions in seconds.
This is Joyce Riley from the Power Hour, and I want to introduce you to Numana Storable Foods. This is the first brand of storable foods that I am willing to put my name behind. It's food you can trust. No GMOs, no MSG, no chemical preservatives, and no fake meat. Plus, Numana doesn't just make that claim. They back it up with independent evaluation and testing. Another thing that Numana really does that excites me is the delicious vegetarian options. If your standards are as high as mine, I can confidently tell you that Numana Storable Foods are the quality choice that you've been waiting for. Numana won't just meet your expectations, they will exceed them. And that's why we're thrilled to have the good guys from Numana joining the Power Hour family. Go to powerprepper.com and learn about Numana Storable Foods. You can also call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Numana, the storable food you'll love to eat.
We fought, we learned, we struggled.
We won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is Mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
I smoke because it's a habit. It's very hard to quit. I've tried.
My wife smokes. It's not allowed in the home. It's not allowed around my children. I just know it isn't good.
My husband hates that I smoke, and I smoke outside.
It irritates her a little bit, but I think she sees and understands what I'm trying to get across to her, that it's not only bad to her, but it's bad to my three beautiful daughters and my two sons.
My dad gets upset with my mom because she smokes and he doesn't, and whenever my mom goes and smokes, she has to go smoke outside.
I don't think my mom should smoke because it's really bad for you, and it could hurt you really bad.
I do think there is a correlation between parents and kids. The parent smokes, the kids think it's okay for them to smoke.
Sometimes, all you need is a small reason to quit.
Yeah, I love my mom very much, but I still wish she'd stop smoking.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Alan Phillips, attorney at law, vaccineresponseproject.com, vaccinerights.com, his award-winning websites. We've been having a very philosophical discussion to this point about rights, how absolute they are. And I know a lot of people are going to try to beat us up and say, guys, you don't know what you're talking about. Don't you know the supreme law? And don't you know that God gave us rights? And we know all that, but we also know they're subject to the whims of man. Go look at the tyrannical societies for thousands of years to prove the point. Even America struggles to keep our rights safe. And that's why we need to work together educationally. We need to stand together morally and on principle, but we need to have practicality in our discussions to make sure that we don't hang separately, pardon the phrase, but that we literally stand together, that we understand civil disobedience in its proper form, but that we don't take that to extreme and put ourselves and others in harm's way. Now, the reason I bring that up is now we're going to switch from a philosophical chat to a very realistic chat about the jab. Kurt has details.
Well, yeah.
First off, this chick should be standing with the boycott and not be at Target in the first place, Kurt.
Good point. yeah, Sam. The headline reads this girl gets how much money was it, Sam? It's a whole bunch of money.
$4.66 million, my friend.
From Target, and because she got stuck by a needle, they say, that she was. Stuck by a needle in the parking lot at Target. So I just found it interesting. It's not exactly the vaccine story, but this thing went to jury, and they gave her $4.6 million. She was stuck by a needle that she picked up in a Target parking lot. There you go.
Ouch. There you go. I wonder if that case eventually, Alan Phillips, could be used when the government tries to give you the jab. You could say it was kind of like I got stuck in a parking lot by my government, and maybe you could sue and win a bunch of money. Well, I'm joking, folks, but I'm trying to make a point.
Yeah, but first I've heard of that case. It sounds really interesting, and it's quite a sum of money, so there must have been some very, very serious consequence for that jab, I would think, for a jury to come up with that sum of money, and Target would had to have been deemed responsible for that, which is also curious because depending on the details, I know that's very curious.
All right, there you go.
They say before the lawsuit went to trial, the lawyer offered to settle it with the retailer for $12,000, but the offer was rejected. Whoops.
There you go.
Well. $12,000, $4 million. I mean,
Who's counting?
Doesn't the other?
But the reason this is important, folks, is to understand that again, a lot of it has to do with what arguments you pick. A lot of it has to do with how educated you are and how you put yourself together. If enough Americans said we want people to have the right to not take vaccinations, I don't think we'd be losing our rights and our freedoms in this regard. Right now, to prove that you don't have a right not to take a vaccine, the government has turned it into a privilege by saying, well, you can fill out these forms and for specific government-identified reasons, you might get an opt-out. We can always take that opt-out that we granted you as a privilege away. And that's kind of where we got to debate privileges versus rights and who determines what, when, how, where. And that's the point you're making about living in reality, is that we the people need to educate ourselves, come together, and by our greater numbers shall we have solutions. If we don't do that, though, we will lose our rights faster than we thought we had them.
One of the what I refer to as myths in the alternative health community in relating to vaccines is a lot of people say, oh, well, there are exemptions anytime vaccines are required, so they're not really required. And I really object to that framing of it because I think it's technically wrong, but it's if it were merely a technicality, I wouldn't be too concerned about it. I think there are potential downside to that. First of all, not everybody can qualify for an exemption every time vaccines are required. And second of all, the starting place is that they are required. And then it's step two. Are there exemptions? If so, what kinds and who, you know, what do you have to do to qualify? Who can or can't qualify?
And those exemptions have primarily created a privilege granted to you by government because you have to ask permission or opt out or fill out a form or do something. It's not eminent, they kind of claim eminent domain over this, don't they?
I think that's a good way of thinking of it. Yeah, you have to be proactive. In fact, they don't even tell you that the options are there. I got letters, you know, year after year with my older son in high school. Every year I get a letter saying, you know, your son doesn't have vaccines and you've got to get your vaccines within the first 30 days. And this varies from state to state. But here in North Carolina, you have 30 days to get up to date on the vaccines before they'll kick you out or the kid out. And they don't say, unless you have a medical or religious exemption, which are the two exemptions we have here for school and daycare vaccine requirements, you have to figure out on your own somehow if you have any question or concern. And I've had lots of people over the years, Sam, say to me, I didn't know you could even opt out. And that's because they don't tell you about it.
And there should be a battle about that. There should be laws that say they must tell you about your options. But again, unless enough Americans get together and push for that, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and there's a real important point here, Sam. The federal government doesn't have authority to mandate vaccines directly for state residents. Now, there's lots of things that go on at the federal level in the vaccine world that are very important. And the federal government has all kinds of ability to coerce states into doing what the federal government wants them to do by saying, you can have these dollars, federal dollars, if you do things our way. And there has been an attempt with a bill recently introduced to Congress that would make certain kinds of federal grant monies contingent upon the states getting rid of their non-medical vaccine exemptions. Last I heard, that bill wasn't going anywhere, fortunately. But the immediate authority is at the state level for most people, because there are some federal jurisdictions, the military, immigration, and so forth. But for most of us, this is a state law issue, and that's where the battleground is, the key battleground is. And over the last couple of years, at any given point in time, there have been over 100 vaccine bills pending in over 30, if not three dozen or more states. This has been a very active legislative arena in state legislatures around the country. And that is, I think, the primary battleground right now, where rights are won or lost, where more vaccines are being required of more people, increasingly now adults. Because, you know, once they open up that adult market, they will double or triple the money they get from the childhood vaccine market. So they want to have adults get regular boosters with all the childhood vaccines. And then there are literally hundreds of new vaccines in development. There's no liability for the manufacturer or anyone administering vaccines for the death or disability caused by vaccines. And so from a pure financial cold calculating point of view, it's a wide open door. So, of course, they want to have as many people being required to get as many vaccines as possible.
And that's why we, the people, have to educate ourselves, get involved in the solutions and be involved legislatively first to help define the law. And we can define the law to protect rights and to appropriately carry out, in my opinion, appropriate respect and careful regard for agency. Or we can sit idly by and not realize and have that taken away from us. And it's all up to us, we the people. A final story before the end of the hour that I think is kind of fascinating. I think Kirk Crosby needs to man up, is all I'm telling you. headline says, spice up your life, Kurt.
Well, yeah. You know, Sam, I figured you'd really enjoy this one. You know, basically it tells you about how, you know, there's some really good ways to, I guess you could say, protect yourself from tumors, cancer. And the story goes, spice up your life, chili and ginger slash the risk of cancer, stopping tumors from growing. Now, of course, this is from the across the pond. The scientists at the American Chemical Society found the compounds capsaicin from chilies and 6-gingerol from ginger cut the risk of lung cancer. And anyway, it's probably not going to be coming to a doctor's office.
Yeah, and they say if you don't handle the spice very well, you got to man up, you know? Just want to make sure that's clear.
That.
Now, the interesting reason we bring this up, though, is there's a lot of natural health and healing opportunities. One, ginger and spices are great for your health. Now, at the end of the article, they say there's been some studies say that it's not good for your health. And I would simply say moderation in all things is even a better plan. But spice and some of these natural solutions are the answer. And it's true for vaccinations as well. And the people aren't told is why we bring it up, Alan Phillips.
No, of course. And this goes back to the comment I made earlier about how corporations are exerting a tremendous influence over policy and law, not only in health, but anywhere else there are profits to be made. And part of the fix here, I think, is putting some sort of proper boundaries in place so that there is a healthy balance and integrity restored to the system. I guess the simplest way would be to say we need to restore integrity to the system. Whatever needs to happen to enable or allow that to occur is what we need to be doing. But, we need to be active legislatively because that's, and again, I think at least with vaccines, primarily at the state law level.
Alan Phillips, thank you so much for your time, my friend.
You're welcome. And I work with folks legislatively around the country. Folks are welcome to contact me.
VaccineRights.com is where you get that done. Thank you, sir.
Take care.
Hey, Kurt, any quick tidbit on that story? Any final note?
Well, you know, the main thing to remember is I think God's got the answers for us, and it's most of the time, in my opinion, not at the end of a needle.
Amen to that. Thanks for being alongside with the ride. Hopefully it was educational and entertaining. Hard-hitting news the networks have used to use, always on tap. LibertyRoundtable.com, LibertyNewsRadio.com, and LibertyNewsDaily.com, the premier sites. Donate and get involved today. Every penny will help grow our presence in the media as the new media takes center stage. This nation shall endure.